Come on now. Ep 471. That's a lot.
You know, we're recording a day early and it feels weird.
I don't get it.
Yeah, it's like it's a Monday. It feels like it's 2 weeks early.
Well, there's always the same, like on Tuesday, there's always the Punch Drunk Sports records right before us.
Right.
So I always see the same collection of comedians. Mm-hmm. And I pulled in the parking lot and there was different comedians.
And a lot more spaces.
Yeah, and in the parking lot, I was like, wow, who are, what's going on? I don't recognize these people. Mm-mm. I don't know what's going on.
Mm-mm. I expect the door to be locked.
I left.
Yeah. I just went home. We're recording 2 hours late.
It just freaked me out.
No, Graham, you have to come back. But no, I'm already back in Santa Monica.
I can't do it. I just, it ruffled me.
Yeah. So we're going to be talking about some fun movies today. We're going to be doing Dark Phoenix, Late Night, some interesting things on DVD and Blu-ray, 5 Feet Apart, Captive State, and Captain Marvel, and some interesting trailers. But we do want to mention, too, there'll be a couple of banked episodes coming up due to road and vacation schedules. Next week, you will get the Godzilla spoiler. And honestly, it was a really good episode. It was really fun.
It was with Neil, who has a wealth of knowledge of the Toho series.
A wealth of passion and knowledge about Godzilla.
Yeah. So he saw a lot of references and Easter eggs and stuff like that in the movie that you and I didn't
know.
We missed.
Because we haven't seen every single Toho Godzilla monster movie that they've made.
Five times each.
Yes. Yeah.
So, yeah, that'll drop next Tuesday, the 18th, in lieu of a regular episode, because I'm going on the road. I'm going to the East Coast the 12th through the 19th. So
check that out. But don't worry, we never leave you with no content.
You have a week to go see Godzilla.
Yes.
And then listen to the spoiler app.
And then to buckle up.
Buckle up. Buckle up.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we have a new guest today. And he's never been on the show
Long-time
before.
Long-time friend of the program.
Friend of the program.
Known him within the podcasting world for years.
But just have not had him specifically on the show. It took Aaron to get him on the show.
Aaron did it.
Mm-hmm.
So, blame him.
Yes.
Oh, you guys play softball together?
We do, yeah.
And
that's how things work. It's like we're golf buddies or... Yeah.
Next thing you know, you're on a podcast.
You know,
I got softball out of the podcast because he listened to my old podcast. And so that's how we became friends, because he listened to it. And then, So it was podcast became softball became other podcast.
Yeah. It all goes in a circle.
It is. Softball is the circle of life, if you think about it.
So, ladies and gentlemen, podcaster, producer, writer, Cole Stratton.
Hello. Thanks for having me on 471. It's a very... special episode.
It really is.
It really is.
You could have saved me for something stupid like 500, but thank you for giving me a 471.
500 is a waste.
Yeah. Yep.
This is much better.
We're halfway to 942. Mm-hmm. So that's
the
most.
That's
the
mark.
That's the
one. That's the one everybody looks for.
You know. So
Cole, tell us about what you've been up to. I know you had the Pop My Culture podcast that ended a couple years ago, and what are you doing now?
Yeah, I mostly work on my festival, SF Sketchfest, which you guys have been up to.
Yes.
So that's kind of my full-time gig. And then...
And for people who don't know, it's every January?
Every January.
Right.
Yeah, for about 18 straight days. It's madness. About 250 shows for 18 days. It's
wow.
In San Francisco. It is a blast. If you've never been
really
to it,
fun.
It's so fun. It has every comedian and podcast you've ever wanted to see in a great city.
Pretty much, yeah. And we're going into our 19th year this January.
Wow. Oh, that's fantastic.
Which is crazy to think that I've been doing it that long, since I'm one of the founders of it, so... We just kind of did it straight out of college and have been doing it ever since. That, and then Pop My Culture ended a couple of years ago. And just been kind of kicking other things around. Janet Varney and I had a kind of limited podcast series on Audible called The Bat, which is like an improvised in the dark podcast that we did live in front of an audience, completely blacked out, which was good.
Nice.
The lights were blacked out. We were fine. We weren't like blackout drunk or anything. But
I don't know. Maybe you tried that. Try that for a future episode.
Incoherent bats. we did that. You can find that on Audible. It's up there. But it's two of us and then four guest improvisers every episode and stuff too. Mm-hmm. So yeah, just been kind of. Popping around to another
place. And then you did Pop My Culture for how long?
7 years.
What was it like to do a podcast for 7 years and then not do it?
It was weird. I mean, honestly, there was sort of a relief to it because I pretty much booked the guests and there was a guest every episode. There was never just me and Vanessa. Mm-hmm. And she did every episode with me except for one where she was
Vanessa
like,
Raglan.
Vanessa Raglan, yeah.
I've done that. I did that show like 6-7 years ago, maybe.
A long time ago, yeah.
And Vanessa is now doing the Dynasty Typewriter.
With Jamie Flam.
Yep.
She runs that. She's on Alchemy This, which is Kevin Pollak's podcast, which actually I sub-host a lot when he's out of town filming Maisel. Mm-hmm. So yeah, she's keeping busy too. But I will say it was a bit of relief for a little while because I don't have to find a guest this week or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we would record like every other week. We kind of tried that. Our schedule is about twice a month because it was just too hard for us to do it any more than that. Which is really sexy for advertisers.
They want to just, they love that.
Spread it out as much as possible. which is a thing I realized that like a lot of podcasts now go twice a week because it doubles your numbers for the week. Because the way that like iTunes and that kind of stuff judges it is based on like your per week stuff. So two episodes, if you have like 50,000 listeners, is like 100,000 on the charts. So I was like, oh, that's pretty devious. I don't know why I never did that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's why Alchemy to This is like twice a week now and other things mm-hmm. like that too, which is pretty crazy.
Did you feel like, man, like, did you miss the show after doing it? Or were you just like, oh, I'm glad I have this off my plate?
I missed it and I still miss it from time to time. But, you know, we did it like 217 episodes, which isn't a lot for 7 years. Like, because we kind of premiered around the same time as Nerdist. And like, by the time we were done, they were on like on episode 784 or whatever. Like mm-hmm. they're releasing 3 a week at a certain point.
Right.
But it, you know, the reason I think we ended it was because Vanessa, like she had a kid a few years ago and mm-hmm. she's like, I'm not watching anything. Like I haven't,
right.
I really just kind of want to focus on being a mom and get my acting stuff going. And it just wasn't fun for her anymore. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of felt like a lot of work for us towards the end there. And before it was just kind of a joy to do. And I think mm-hmm. we kind of knew that, all right, we'll hang it up. So we did the last one live at Sketchfest, with Paul F. Tompkins, Sam Levine and Rhett Miller. It was mm-hmm. a lot of fun. And yeah, been kicking around ideas with Sam Levine. We're buddies too. So we've been talking about starting a few things, but we're both like just lazy enough to talk about it and not get it going.
Perfect.
Someday.
Someday. One of these days, mm-hmm. within the next year or two, hopefully you'll see something from us.
All right. Well, we all saw Dark Phoenix. So let's talk about this last X-Men movie for some time as, you know, Disney reacquires everything and has plans to fold it into the MCU, but it's not going to happen right away. Mm-hmm. You know, they've even said it's going to be a couple of years before you see the X-Men again. And I can guarantee you they're going to recast everybody. Nobody's going to make the transition. There's no reason to. That's what Marvel does. You know, well, if we're going to, you know, do this and put it in the MCU, we're going to do it our way and start over. Mm-hmm. So I have to say, this was kind of like a nice swan song for the X-Men that the cinematic universe that we know. As you know, the X-Men movies have been up and down, shall we say. As far as quality
aren't
goes.
You polite?
Yes. Yes. as far as quality goes, all over the map. You've got First Class and you've got Brett Ratner. So there's definitely goes many different directions.
That's how you, the two columns are just.
Pretty much.
And what a storied cinematic career Brett Ratner has had. Yes. X3, you know?
So I liked Dark Phoenix for sure. I really felt like it kind of paid homage to the X-Men movies that came before it, but also kind of charted some new ground. Where the Dark Phoenix saga has been in the comics for years, and it's a huge, big story. And X-Men fans for years have been like, well, when are they going to do Dark Phoenix? And it's like, oh, we get a shadow under the water for, you know, X-Men 3. That's all we get for Dark Phoenix. And then that was forgotten for years, and now they finally did the storyline here in a much condensed version. Because I don't know if you're a comic reader, but there's a lot more to the Dark Phoenix saga than, you know, than the movie.
For sure. Yeah, I used to read a lot of Marvel comics growing up. I was one of those like Marvel, not DC guys. Like mm-hmm. DC never did much for it. This is a weird rivalry when you're like 12. Like,
right?
You
choose. So crazy.
It's like, stupid. It's really dumb.
Though we all read both.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We just had to pick a side.
Right. Know, just like, and then like Dark Horse came up and you're like, I guess I can read this.
Yeah. You know, right. Like, well, they're independent. Weird. That doesn't count.
Right. But yeah, I was a big Marvel kid. So I only read stray DC issues, but I was big into Marvel. And X-Men was my favorite book. So I have kind of like X-Men 175 through 300. Like that's kind of when I read it. So there's a lot of great storylines out there that they've never touched, which was why I'm always kind of leery about like why they sort of soft reboot a lot of storylines and bring them back here and there, which is kind of like, well, there's so many things you could be doing that are great that you were, you know, 10 episode arc or issue arcs that they could be up to. So so I always had a bit of a soft spot for X-Men, and I was really excited when they brought it to the screen. And I was very happy with the first movie. Like I didn't like that they went the DC route of like black leather. Like, let's, you know, in the film universe thing. It's like, they have looks. Like, let them have the look.
You know, I honestly think, you know, the studios and production designers didn't know what else to do with, like, superhero costumes. Like, well, they can't be bright yellow. Just make everything dark and leathery. And that was it, because that's all we got for a while.
Yep.
Everything looked like the Batman, Michael Keaton's Batman suit.
Right. Everybody.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Literally.
Daredevil, yep, anyone. Yep. All mm-hmm. of them.
They all looked like Dark superhero repertory players in a theater yes, company.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Repertory. Yeah. That superhero rep is amazing. Mm. They do it. They have a fantastic mm-hmm. schedule.
Wear your superhero blacks. Well, it'll all be neutral. Yeah. So.
Superhero
I never really got that. Like, I just, they have looks for a reason. I know that you need to, like, obviously you can't make it super bright because you can't have these characters wandering around like a little, oh, I see him. He's right there. Like, there's no big deal if they're that bright. But there's ways to make it kind of reminiscent of what their look is supposed to be instead of just completely killing it and just being like, oh, well, he has his power. So I know that it's Banshee because he's screaming or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, like, you can make them look like they're supposed to look at least a little bit.
Right.
So that always kind of bummed me out.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I actually like Dark Phoenix a decent amount, like, and the reviews were terrible going in. Like, the Rotten Tomatoes was like 20% or whatever.
Really?
So, really?
It's really low. So I didn't have high expectations for it. Mm-hmm. And I've kind of learned not to, because Apocalypse was pretty bad.
Yes.
And, you know, I just, I always look at these things as like, it's just an episode or an issue I haven't read yet in my mind. Like, so some are going to be great and some aren't going to be great. But I don't get so bent out of shape about it like so many of these fans do about everything. Right. Like, you know, nobody hates Star Wars more than the Star Wars fans. Like, that kind of thing. Like,
it's true.
It makes me crazy. It's I get
that's
it.
A great
like
way to put it.
It wasn't exactly what you wanted it to be. It wasn't exactly what you thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. It's amazing that any movie gets made ever, because there's so many hands on it.
Sure.
That the fact that they even get it filmed and edited and acted and it's decent is a miracle 9 times out of 10.
Mm-hmm. These movies are the equivalent of these big budget ones are the equivalent of like building a new 70,000 seat stadium. You know, when there's like a new stadium, like it's taken years, the Rams stadium, and it's going to have this and all this stuff in there. That's how much money and time and effort and people they're putting involved in this. And then, so for everybody to just lose their shit over, it would be like the new stadium and then just be like, they didn't have a gluten-free stand, you know, or whatever. It's like, it's a great point. It's just an issue. When you were reading comics as a kid, or even now as an adult, and you come across an issue that's not that great, do you go online and just lose your shit that, like, they've sold us all out, they've ruined it? No, they just swung and missed.
And if you'd like to keep the stadium analogy going, imagine you're making a stadium, and it's at every 10 days, somebody's like, what if instead of seats, there was just like a hole with water in it that everybody just kind of floated in during the game?
Okay.
I think that would be different, right?
Well,
maybe seats is the way we should go. I don't know. Like, that kind of thing. So, yeah, it is just like another issue. So I just don't get bent out of shape about that stuff anymore. Sometimes I walk out going like, yeah, it's a bit of it's a bummer. It's disappointing or whatever, but I'm never upset about it.
Where do you put it, not in the whole Marvel universe, but just in the X-Men
movies? The X-Men trajectory, I put it towards the bottom, but not at the bottom. Like, I think for me, X2 is my favorite. It always has been. That opening scene with Nightcrawler, like, bouncing around the White House or whatever, is amazing to me. Mm-hmm. And then, like, I like Days of Future Past a lot. I like First Class a lot. Obviously, Logan's fantastic, if you count the Wolverine ones.
Sure.
I definitely put it above Apocalypse and X3 and that kind of stuff, too. So, I don't know, it's kind of in the middle towards the bottom. Like, there's the ones I like a lot better than it, but I didn't dislike it. I walked out being like, okay, it was decent.
It was a good, I thought it had a good, just the way, like, I'm trying to say, like, the story was good, but I think the way it unfolded, the pacing, that's what I'm trying to say. I like the pacing of this film. Like, it didn't just throw you into a bunch of explosions, like, at the very beginning.
Because, that gets tiresome.
Yeah, exactly. Because I'm like, well, if everything's blowing up in the opening scene, where do we go from here? Mm-hmm. Just more stuff's going to blow up, so I'm done. But what I liked about it is it slowly unfolded, like, what was going on with Jean and her becoming Dark Phoenix and the energy and you know, there is, you know, the aliens coming in and not to get into any spoilers, but, you know, there's aliens and there's a Dark Phoenix force. But I love the way it was tied in and like, well, yeah, that's what's going on. But there's also stuff going on with her internally as well. And that's this powerful force is magnifying it. So we got those rare moments of character development that we don't always get in superhero movies, where characters are actually relating to each other on a human level. And the movie took time for those scenes, when normally a lot of times you don't. Just like, we need more people being punched in the face or more things blowing up. So.
Plus, we got an X-Men kegger, and you don't get that.
No,
often,
you don't. You
know? So that was good.
You got a little hint of Jubilee in the forest, and like, with the little light show. And it was interesting to see like an entire mansion filled with future X-Men. Like, but what was interesting is you never saw any of their powers. There were just
kids.
You know, they were just, yeah. There were around. Dozens of kids walking around, and you never really saw, well, does anybody do anything? What's
I mean, I liked it. You know, I feel similarly. I'm like, well, there's the X-Men movies and then there's the MCU. And it's because of a rights ownership issue, yeah. Which is why they're different. And I would only put maybe, you know, Logan and First Class, most of the Wolverine ones, like, were pretty awesome. Like Logan, mm-hmm. and then the one where he goes to Japan, that Samurai one.
Yeah, that one's good. Like, except for the last third.
Right.
The first two thirds are fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's only a handful I could even consider putting into comparison with the rest of the Marvel movies. But there's still always, like, aside from the obvious ones we've talked about that are just disasters, they're still always like, okay, yeah, and I always remember the first X-Men movie, putting it in context of the fact that prior to that, superhero movies, Marvel movies, had been horrifying.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They had been really bad.
Remember when we were saying, oh, Marvel movies will never be as good as Batman.
Nope.
And Michael Keaton's Batman.
Yeah, that was how low the bar was, yeah. for us as comic book fans.
Yeah, no, it was bad. They were bad. I mean, I go with my friend Gabe Diani a lot to these things. I used to when I was in college and high school, mm-hmm. and stuff like that, too. And, like, we would always just joke about, I remember we went and saw Daredevil, which was terrible. Mm-hmm. And afterwards, we were just joking, like, well, if they ever make a Guardians of the Galaxy, we can go see that. Because that book was, like, not good. This is, right. like, when we read it, it was, like, pre-Rocket Raccoon and, like,
right.
and Groot and all that stuff, too. It was kind of like the butt of a comics joke. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, like, they made it, and it was amazing. It was fantastic. Yeah. And I just never saw that happening. It just felt like all the Marvel Comics movies weren't really good. They weren't going anywhere, like The Punisher.
This,
like,
isn't even counting, you know, the... remember the Fantastic Four movie that Roger Corman did? That,
yeah.
Like, good luck try even find it, but I got it, like, a copy of it, and it is an absolute disaster. It's like, if you ever imagine a superhero movie being made for $4, that's what it would look like.
Yeah. It was, so, like, I always, for whatever reason, when I go to the X-Men movies, I always put it in that historical context of, mm-hmm. like, okay, you know, like, this was amazing, you know, for its era, for its time. They've made some good movies. And this was a decent story. It wasn't, was I going nuts for it like I did Endgame or Infinity War? Like, I walked out of those movies like, ah, what? You know?
Mm, right.
No, but it was decent in the X-Men universe. You know, X-Men is always about most superhero movies, but the X-Men world has always been about, you're not a weirdo, you're not, you know, you're called right. a mutant, and you mm-hmm. know, and unleash your powers. And then there's always that battle of, what if you unleash your powers for, but that's always been the Magneto, you know what I mean? That mm-hmm. of like, well, they hate us, so fuck them, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah.
And so that was interesting. And her, without getting into the spoilers of it, you know, her dilemma of her origin story, you know, mm-hmm. and that was really interesting. There were some moments that were a little boring,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, they did, I think Chris Gore on last week's episode put it well in terms of, they wrapped it up, the X-Men world, they set us up for the kids if they want to do more. And I was like, fine,
yep.
great. You know, like, it was fun. It was entertaining. It's like, you, Cole, like, I view it just like, oh, that was a good issue.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't an issue I'm going to be talking about for 20 years,
no,
like, you know, the Dark Knight series or whatever, V for Vendetta, but it's something right. you're going to go, yeah, cool.
Well, this was Jessica Chastain's first Marvel movie, which was interesting because she turned down the roles of Maya Hansen in Iron Man 3 and Hope Van Dyne in Ant-Man. And I'm thinking, well, you turned down those two, but this is the one you picked?
She played a good villain, just a cold, stone-faced villain.
Oh, yeah. I'm like, well, you don't really get to act. You're just kind of talking slowly. That's she played.
That's probably why she took the gig.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah.
I don't want to run around and get a personal trainer. I'm just going to walk up and stone facedly just say, "You need to come with us," or whatever.
Yeah. Right. And then the rest will be computer effects.
Yeah, whatever. What do I got to do?
Yeah. So it's the directorial debut of writer Simon Kinberg, and he has lived with the X-Men for many, many years. You know, he's written a bunch of these movies, and even like the TV properties, you always kind of see him somewhere as an EP.
Right.
Like, you know, he's got his hand in so many of these. The film takes place in 1992, the year the X-Men comics were relaunched with new costume designs and the new cartoon show, X-Men the Animated Series. I actually remember that. And I think one of the streaming services had it, and my kids actually rediscovered it, and they watched it there, too.
Yeah, I definitely, I was reading, that was, for me, I was in just beginning high school at that time, so I was definitely into all that stuff, and the X-Men relaunch, and because Uncanny was what I read forever, and then the relaunch happened, and that was back when, like, all of a sudden, the comics started getting really expensive, and they all had these, like, die-cast covers that were, like, more expensive issues, and all of a sudden, it was, like, $4 per issue instead of, like, $1.25, and that's kind of when I started to get out of collecting, because it just got prohibitively expensive, because I had a box at a comic shop where, like, you know, weekly, they would pull the issues that you told them to pull or whatever, so you'd get them first if it was a special issue, but yeah, the X-Men relaunch was, like, a big deal at the time, too. I remember that, for sure.
So, all right. Any final thoughts on Dark Phoenix?
Yeah, it's worth seeing if you if you like the X-Men world, it's not going to be a huge disappointment. There's some, I think the woman that actress who played Dark Phoenix, I think
Sophie Turner,
she did a really great job of showing the conflict that she's having within and you know, all, I think they did a fine job. And like you say, it wasn't just one big explosion to the next.
Right.
There was some story, there was some character arc that. That's the thing I'm so over in these big budget movies just
the explosions.
Well, yeah, it's just one thing next to another. We're gonna die, bro. You know, and then there's another one, and I don't care if they die.
I agree with you guys. I think this movie was definitely kind of in the middle, like it wasn't the best one, but it was nowhere near the worst ones. So it was a good ending.
Plus, Michael Fassbender kind of steals every scene.
He's amazing. Yeah.
Fantastic in it.
Like, of course,
I'll miss him in the reboots because I'm sure this is the last time he's played Magneto. But,
oh yeah, this will be it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but yeah, he was fantastic.
Yeah, it was really okay. All right, next movie. Now you saw Late Night.
I did.
So tell us about that movie, Cole.
It's really good. It's nice to see Emma Thompson in like a really juicy, fantastic role. And Mindy Kaling wrote it and stars in it as well. And I've always been kind of like on the fence about her, but I thought she's really good in it. And a lot of good character actors and other parts too. Dennis O'Hare, people like that. It's good. It's really, really good. It's real written, well performed. It's very funny. Moves at a good clip. I mean, I don't know how realistic it is in terms of like backstage at a late night show kind of stuff, because that's a world that I've never seen in person. I can't tell you how realistic that is. And not to spoil anything, it kind of wraps itself up in a way that's like, okay. But yeah, it's definitely worth seeking out. I know it's just kind of playing, I think, limited right now. It hasn't really gone wide yet because it's all at the Landmark. But
I've seen the trailer and there's some funny moments in it, but I'm also...
I was worried that it looks like it may not come together the way it should, but it sounds like it did.
It's good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's solid. It's not like something that I would say like is the funniest comedy I've ever seen or anything like that, but it's amusing. It's definitely funny and well-performed. And I just love Evan Thompson. I just feel like... She's been allowed to age, which I love.
Right.
Which is like a thing that just doesn't happen much in Hollywood, which is sad. Mm-hmm. But like she's still like fantastic and beautiful and funny and like sharp and clever. And like this role is perfect for her in that scenario. And it's nice to see a comedy that's like smart. It's not dumb. And to see her and Mindy Kaling at the forefront of it is great. I think the top four billed people are women. So which is fantastic, which is doesn't happen that much. Which might be why it's limited right now. Move it wider.
See if it goes, wide release.
Right. But I think it will. I think it's getting good reviews overall, so I think it'll push.
Now, as far as, like, the story goes, it's Mindy Kaling is a writer that gets a job on this late-night show where Emma Thompson is the host, and then that's all the trailer gives you, which is good. Like, the trailer doesn't give away too much of it, and then I guess the story goes from there.
Yeah, the setup is pretty simple. It's just that she has, like, an all-male writer's room, and her show's kind of, like, gone downhill, and then she's told this is her last year. And she's, like, she's won all these Emmys. She's, like, very famous, like, icon of late-night. And so she's just trying to figure out, okay, oh, this is my show. How do I fix this? This is like everything to me. And then she realizes that she has no women writers, period, on the thing. And so she tells Dennis O'Hare, this is the very beginning, just like, go get me a woman writer. And Mindy Kaling happens to get an interview, and she works at like a power plant. Like, she's not a professional writer. And they explain how she gets the interview and all that stuff too. But like, and then they hire her on, and it's about that kind of relationship and figuring out how to turn her show around and fix the writer's room and stuff too. And yeah, it's good.
Nice.
All right, check it out. All right. Well, Graham, we have a sponsor today.
What?
Eero Wi-Fi.
Are we going to talk about Ma or no?
No. It turns out none of us saw it. So we'll be talking about that maybe next show, because it's something I actually want to catch, because I'm actually...
You thought you were going to see it.
I thought I was going to see it, and I did not. And here's why I wanted to see it after seeing the trailer and not wanting to see it. It's actually the same director that directed Octavia Spencer in The Help.
Well, then, so yes, that would make Taylor. Suddenly that yeah, would make yeah, me want to yeah. go see this.
Which Allison Janney is in it as well, because of that whole Help
wow.
thing.
So, yeah.
So after
I love
that,
Allison
like,
Janney,
you know,
and
what?
I love Octavia Spencer.
I kind of, because now it tells me they might have done something interesting with it. So now I kind of want to go see it. So
it seems like the kind of thing, looking at the, if you were to just told me the premise of that movie.
And seen the trailer, I'm like, no.
Seen the, and different people, you might have gone, all right. But you start saying, that's that director, and then Octavia Spencer and Allison Janney, you go, that team could take this sort of flimsy horror thriller premise and make it really cool and interesting.
Yeah.
And it's Blumhouse, so I never know how I feel about that. Because, you know, it could be Get Out, which is great. You know, they give creative control to the people that do these movies, which is probably why, and they shoot them on a shoestring budget, and so they always make tons of money. But half of them are jump scare movies, which I don't have any time for in my life. Like, when the Nun trailer would happen in the theater, I started walking out and going to use the bathroom and come back in. Because, that jump scare is so cheap at the end. And I hate it. And everybody then would just start talking like, oh, this is going to be the best movie ever. I'm like, no, you just got completely fooled. Like, it's not that good.
It's all those cheap scares.
Yeah, all of them. And you've seen them 1,000 times before.
Literally, I'm like, is a black cat going to go meow, and jump in the window and make me... Is the wind going to blow open a window?
I open up the medicine cabinet... which has a mirror on it, and then I close it.
Who's in the mirror behind
me? Who's
going to
be behind me now?
And we only have one music stab for all of those scenes, and we're going to use it over and over again for 20 years. So,
God willing.
So, so we have Eero as a sponsor, the Eero Wi-Fi system. Never think about Wi-Fi again. It's a really cool system. They're doing the second generation Eeros and Eero beacons. They have a tri-band, so it's twice as fast. It's great. It has increased speed and range. It sits flat on the surface, plugs in with a power adapter, and it connects over Ethernet or wirelessly in any combination. So what it is, it's a system that you have one kind of gateway, and then you have the beacons that you can put in plugs throughout the rest of your house to extend your Wi-Fi range. Because we don't have a giant house, but if we have our... we want to get Wi-Fi in the garage, so it doesn't go from the garage all the way to the bedroom. So this was like a perfect solution for us. We set it up, and we have the beacons in the house, and it actually ends up extending all the way to the bedrooms. But what's great is it's really easy to set up. You do it through your app on your phone.
Oh, really?
So you have and it connects through Bluetooth, so you're near the beacons, and it tells you, nope, try again. Put it somewhere closer. or I'm like, yep. Set it up. Now put the other one on, and you know, and then you can check the Wi-Fi regardless of where you are in the house. So it's really, really good, and it's simple, because I've had those moments where I'm setting up a Wi-Fi system and a router, and I'm trying to figure out the IP address to access the router and putting in and it's a nightmare. And so this is 1,000 times easier. So it's really good. It's a distributed system. You can install a Wi-Fi system in your home for just minutes. And you can manage the network from the palm of your hand with the app, which is great. But here's the thing, Graham. As always, why would you pay full price if you're a Comedy Film Nerds listener?
We're not going to do that to you.
Of course not.
We're not dicks.
You know, I mean, you've got great customer support. You've got all of these things. And you know, they push software updates to their customers. So you always have the most updated software on the router and the Eero and the beacons. So they have overnight shipping. And we're going to give it to you guys for free. Eero.com, and at checkout, select overnight shipping, then enter comedy, and you make it free. So visit Eero.com, Eero.com, and at checkout, select overnight shipping, and then enter comedy to make it free. So check it out, Eero. It's really great, and it's easy to set up and use.
All right, that's exciting.
Yep, and we have some Patreon sponsors, too.
Oh, you know, guys, if you go to patreon.com/comedyfilmnerds, you, too, can have your business or project or whatever read, as Chris is about to do right now on Comedy Film Nerds episode 471.
Halfway to what?
942.
Perfect. Okay. We have Johnny Rule on. I love that Johnny Rule on just keeps going back month after month.
Johnny's fantastic.
And he's got his novel Green Cheek, A Junkie's Guide to Street Magic. It's on Amazon, both digital and hard copy. It's an experimental stream of consciousness novel. It follows the exploits of the muse Calliope, an immortal lover, T.S., on a journey through time, dreams, and the hidden places of a supernatural America. Check it out, happyhorrorshowproductions.com, happyhorrorshowproductions.com. Fanboy Planet, a website and podcast for all things geeky and amazing. Check out Fanboy Planet for all your comic news, your movie news, TV news, and interviews. Check out fanboyplanet.com. And from Chris Parker Howard, Coffee Over Suicide, a dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death. One cup of coffee at a time. New episodes every Friday, wherever podcasts are found. Check it out over coffeeoversuicide.com, coffeeoversuicide.com. And Alice Frazier, host of The Bugle, co-host of The Bugle, and host of Tea with Alice, brings you a series of three genre-bending solo stand-up shows that explore the boundary between comedy and tragedy. They were recorded back-to-back as a three-hour show at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival with a binaural microphone, which creates an intensely immersive listening experience. Go to alicefrazier.com, alicefrazier.com. Now, I just did Tea with Alice, and we have like a fair amount of crossover audience with Tea with Alice, and I got some nice comments. Someone called me an astute observer of the world in the comments. I feel like I should put that on my resume.
I would say Chris Mancini.
That's got to be a hashtag somewhere.
That should be your moniker. That's your brand.
That's my log line.
That is Chris.
Your business cards, print them up.
I feel like it.
So it was a really fun show to do, and we have the Art Podcast, a new episode with writer Mark Silver talking about the realities of art and life. Check out the Art Podcast on social media and at theartpodcasts.com with an S. All right, Graham, ready for some trailers? I already set them up for you and minimized.
You're so great. I was going to not have them ready.
Yeah. That would be the opposite.
That's the exact opposite of that.
So we have Ford versus Ferrari. And I got to tell you, when the teaser trailer first came out, I was completely unimpressed, but now I'm on board.
So look out there.
Use the headphones if you want.
Out there is the perfect lap. You see it?
So, got Christian Bale. I almost said he has an insufferable British accent, but then I realized, oh no, I forgot he's British.
Most people can't.
Carol Shelby.
Maybe.
Lee Iacocca, Ford Motor.
Damon was horrible English, American accent.
So bad.
To win the 24 hours of Le Mans. What's it take?
Well, it takes something money can't buy.
Money can buy speed.
What in about speed?
You need a pure racer behind the wheel of your car. That's Ken Miles.
I don't trust him an inch.
We heard he's difficult.
No, Ken's a puppy dog.
It's completely believable when you see a scene of Christian Bale punching somebody.
Yes, it is.
Good sting, too.
Yeah.
I think that's an outtake, actually. Yeah.
With a Ford.
Correct.
First time a trailer has ever used a Rolling Stones song.
And how long did you tell them that you needed? 200-300 years?
90 days.
This isn't the first time Ford Motors has gone to war. We know how to do more than push paper. Go ahead, Carol. Go to war.
Thank you, sir.
There needs to be a moratorium on this song.
We're lighter. We're faster. That don't work. We're nastier.
Gonna make history.
At least it isn't Life is a Highway.
That was boring.
I would have had to turn it off.
Bale, you can drive my car.
Cross town traffic, so hard to get through to you. All right, they're already dangling some Oscar bait.
For sure. And here, I found this very interesting when I saw that trailer. It's because it's very different from the teaser. It's
rivalries
a better.
And business
But they make the reference of, it's not the first time Ford has gone to war. Go to war. And I realized after I saw that line in the trailer, they shot this like a trailer for a war movie. That's exactly what they put it together. Like, well, we're making a just pretend you're making a World War II trailer movie.
Right.
And
I mean, Ford was huge in the War of 1812.
Yeah, yeah.
They're the reason we have our independence.
Right.
From the Ford Motor Company.
Yeah. Yes. It was the Model T that mm-hmm. helped us win.
Yep. Just crank it up, put it on the battlefield.
Part of me, as you know, when I was a kid, I was a car. I liked race cars and all that mm-hmm. stuff, and I loved the Shelby Mustang. You know, this seems intriguing to me, but I don't know. I hear a lot of accents and I hear a lot of, I don't know.
I've never been into cars ever. I would be more interested in a movie that's just about how dependable my Subaru is. But this
we're
actually,
going to war with dependability.
Yeah.
This actually looks pretty good to me. Mm-hmm. At least entertaining enough to take a look at it, I think. Mm-hmm. I'm always interested to see what Christian Bale's going to do and mm-hmm. how much he's going to weigh and like, what
yes,
he's going to be
into. Yeah, exactly. Right. Like, all right, are you,
how much he's going to weigh.
Yeah, are you machinist but can punch?
Right.
So now you're like somewhere in the middle? Is that yeah.
So I think, yeah, I mean, it could be, it, you know, it's they're it's the producers from Walk the Line. I liked Walk the Line. Mm-hmm. I like a car race accent haircut movie. So, you know, I guess we'll...
And I like James Mangold as a director, so yeah. like I'll yeah. give him the benefit of the doubt because like you know Logan and Walk the Line, but also like Copland and things like
right.
that too. So I think he's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
He's been a good
at creating conflict and yeah. Drama for sure,
for sure. Mm-hmm. And like he'll take these movies that are technically a big canvas movie now and make it feel kind of small too
mm-hmm.
in a good way.
That's such a great point. That's right. The thing that Mangold does so well is mm-hmm. he'll take these big people and these big moments and boil it down to some really simplistic human moment. You know, he did that so well in Walk the Line of these like little subtle moments, you know, that were huge points of history. So like in Walk the Line when he records at Folsom Prison, right? And he's backstage and he's got dirty water and he's like, hey, Warden, you drink this water? He goes, I'm a Coca-Cola man myself. And he's like, And he just kind of smiles. And then he goes on stage and because he comes in and tells him, do more Christian songs. Don't rile the boys up. And he's like, this song's for your warden. And he throws the water down. Oh, this dirty water. I thought I was tough. And does that whole speech. And, you know, Mangold dramatizes that event, which was they told Johnny Cash he was crazy to make that. It ended up being his most successful album ever and broke it down into these very personal moments backstage with the warden. Did it happen that way? I don't know. Mm-hmm. But he did it that way and it really as you say, takes this bigger moment and makes it smaller. So that's what I'm guessing we're going to see. And in that trailer, knowing it's Mangold, there's going to be these little subtle, quiet moments where these guys, you know, go, oh, this can't be done. And some of them goes, well, who said, why not?
Mm-hmm.
Which is how those big things always start. Somebody at a diner or an auto go, why mm-hmm. not?
Mm-hmm.
And then the trajectory makes this amazing thing.
Yep.
And you can put out a version.
I'm sure they
of,
said that, oh, but I'm sure we could have used more than 90 days.
So. You can put out a version of Logan that's black and white and get away with it. Like, that's
right.
pretty ballsy and great. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, I think it's good. I think it looks good. I think I'll give it a shot.
All right.
Yeah, and the next one is Ad Astra. This is the this is a space 2001 movie that Christopher Nolan didn't make.
I do what I do because of my dad. He was a hero. He gave his life for the pursuit of knowledge.
Getting that over.
That's accurate. Sound doesn't carry in space. Apparently the soundtrack is.
It's crazy out there. There's fires everywhere and plane crashes. They're calling it the Surge.
Major. We have some highly classified information.
What can you tell us about the Lima Project?
Its objective was to search for advanced extraterrestrial life. The ship disappeared approximately 16 years into the mission.
And the commander was?
He was my father, sir.
I hate that leading question that makes no sense. He already knows that.
Your father was experimenting with a highly classified material that could threaten our entire solar system. All life would be destroyed. We're counting on you to
find out what's happening out there.
I worry about you. I love you.
Please begin your
psychological. You've got hints of Interstellar in here for sure.
Mm-hmm.
As best you can. Please describe your.
But then you also got like Tommy Lee Jones.
I'm feeling good.
He's missing.
Ready to do my job to the best of my abilities.
This is the space cowboy sequel we were waiting
for. Yes. Because, you know, it shouldn't be hard to find someone in space.
To the lawful completion.
Oh, he's running into the Armageddon gang.
Yeah.
If necessary, I will destroy the project in its entirety.
This is such a weird scene. Now, they're having, like, a...
The Earth put its hopes in
a shootout on Land Rovers. The moon or something.
Now, it's fate. It's on me.
And the problem I have is...
Did none of it make any
you
sense?
You have a job to do. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. You know, everyone wants some of that
Interstellar-y award.
Oscar.
Award buzz.
Yeah, what was the other one? Gravity.
Yes, Gravity.
You want to get into that gravity space.
But look at how First Man was ignored.
Yeah.
I mean, it really was. Like, it came out and everybody thought had high expectations, and then, like, it got, like, a score nomination or whatever, and people were kind of on the fence about it. And I think that this one might underperform because of that same thing. I think people are getting space fatigue.
I think you're right, because Interstellar didn't do as well as I thought. Interstellar was amazing.
I loved Interstellar, yeah.
But it didn't...
But neither movie had a shootout with moon rovers.
Right.
That's what the movie should be called.
Yeah, yeah, shootout with moon rovers.
Gravity won a bunch of awards. Interstellar didn't get as many nominations and as many awards as I thought it deserved, and then, like you say, First Man just kind of barely got anything. It barely moved the needle at all.
It messed up the Oscar polls with winning Best Effects.
Right. So. This is curious. I mean, this is obviously Oscar bait.
Mm-hmm.
I don't
they
know.
They both are. They both are.
Yeah, they're
sure.
Both very big Oscar-y movies. So I am curious to see them, but I don't know.
Mm-hmm. On the fence?
Very fancy.
And the title, too. Like, what does that have to do with anything?
Yeah, Astra, maybe it's the name of
the project
ship or
that they're working
project,
on. Or
yeah.
Ship
yeah.
Or like, yeah.
That's a the name of it sounds horrible.
Yeah, my first thought was they just spelled Ed Asner wrong.
Right.
It just sounds like some sort of, like, tech or pharmaceutical company.
Yeah.
Like, Ad Astra makes all of your world life needs combined together in one iCloud.
Side effects include.
Yeah. It's the name of Tommy Lee Jones's gardener.
Yeah.
Maybe that's.
Ad Astra is not for everybody.
Yeah.
Ask your doctor if Ad Astra is right for you.
Side effects include your father disappearing in space and the end of life on the planet Earth.
So, actually, we should take a little poll, like, and I'm sure it's online somewhere, but we don't know the answer. What do we think Ad Astra is?
Without Googling it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure.
Without asking Aaron.
We're going online. I'm sure you can find the answer online, but just off the top of your head, what do you think it is? Mm-hmm.
I think it's the name of the ship that got lost, that Tommy Lee Jones was on.
I think it's like the robot that has become completely aware and is going to blow up the planet, and they've got to fight it in a HAL-type way.
I think it is the code name for the project that Tommy Lee Jones was working on. Sort of like how Cloverfield was just the fake title for the movie and then ended up being the name of the movie because it was just being secretive. I think that's what that Ad Astra is, like the Ad Astra project or whatever.
Okay, Aaron, we're going to keep going, and then when you have the answer, let us know if it exists. Okay. All right, now we have on DVD and Blu-ray, we have Captain Marvel. This was, again, fun movie. Not my favorite Marvel movie, but it was still fun. But it did feel rushed. I think they didn't do enough with Brie Larson and her character. And it also, it's interesting because it bled over into Endgame because she didn't feel that developed there either. Mm-hmm. So it's very powerful, came and went and blew a bunch of stuff up. And but really, we didn't really get to the core of her character the way they did with the other Marvel characters for sure. So I think we're going to see more of Captain Marvel. I'd like them to spend more time on the actual character than her powers. I feel like the focus was more on her. Like, she's the Superman of the Marvel Universe. Well, that's great, but, you know, we know Superman's entire backstory and all of those things. It's not just about flying and heat vision. You know, we know the origin and his philosophy towards humanity and all those things. So we wanted to see more of that.
All right, Aaron, I'm sorry, before we weigh in on that, Aaron, you have some information on what Ad Astra means.
Now, this is was going to be sort of my guess. It was going to be, it's Latin, so I figured it meant something in Latin, and it means to the stars.
Oh, so kind of generic.
So it's just a Latin thing?
Yeah, like, all right, to the stars.
E pluribus unum.
Yes. All right, that makes me want to see the movie Less Snow.
Yeah. Yes. All right. Put a dead land wage thing.
Maybe that's like something he says to Liv Tyler before he leaves work. They go, Ed Astra.
Ed Astra.
Fist bump, and then he takes off.
Ed Astra, baby. Appeals out of the driveway in a Corvette. All right.
And next one. Oh, go ahead.
I don't know.
My only issue with Captain Marvel, real quick, is that she's the most powerful, probably, hero in the Marvel universe, right? Yes. Like, they kind of make that claim to it. But she's so busy with all the other planets in the solar system that she can't be bothered to be more hands on deck for Thanos, who is basically wiping out half of the universe and that whole thing. So to me, that whole thing is just a little bit like, all right, they have all these, they just want to, like, close the book on the first phase of the things and give the Avengers their send-offs and that whole thing. So she can't really be involved.
Right.
But the logic of it is like, oh, I'm just busy in Quasar 4 or wherever they are. I got to clock in over there. Mm-hmm. Like, that just always kind of bothered me a little bit. Like, but thanks for your page.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's my only kind of real qualm with it.
Yeah, that's the thing. And I think it kind of goes to Chris's point a little bit, which is sort of how I felt was, I wish they would have written it out a little. Like, I don't know, I felt like, I know they were trying to be quippy 90s dialogue, but it got a little old for me, and I wanted to give her more, because Brie Larson is such a fine actress that I felt like, I mean, it was still a fun movie. I had fun. It's not the worst Marvel movie ever. And I think, you know, I remember we talked about it when we did the spoiler for it, was, had this come out earlier in the Marvel world, we probably would have thought it was more amazing, but now we're putting it up against the Guardians movie, Infinity War, you know, so it's like, it has a higher bar for sure. The Marvel world does.
I also don't like the period things in it. I mean, I love the idea of them, but it's always just like, I'm wearing a Nirvana shirt. I'm like, it's just always just like, they point it out half the time too, and I just hate that. It's just like, just be in that time period, and the little details will be there, but you don't have to point it out so much.
It doesn't, you don't have to have an Atari logo on your shirt for us to know it's the 80s. That's, you know, you don't have to beat us over the head with it. So I
pull
agree
out
with
some
that
giant too. Cell phone and go, oh, wow, aren't these small?
The go-to always seems the band shirt. That always seems like, that's like the first thing everyone goes to. And it's like, okay.
Or the posters on the wall of a kid that's like a teenager, which were clearly like, not necessarily would be up on that person's wall. It's just something that they got clearances for or whatever that are time period, you know, sensitive. And it just always, that always kind of bugs me. So like, look at any teen's wall in a period piece and just see like what set dressing they just put up there that they got the rights to. They're like, I don't know if that kid was that into Screaming Trees or whatever it is. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Like, what does the prop house have available? That's the kid's favorite band.
And there were kids when I was in the 80s that were like Elvis fans or whatever. They had Elvis and Beatles in there. They didn't all have Tiffany and Debbie Gibson or whatever. Like, so it's never that accurate. Like you say, it just feels like set dressing for that period. A kid would have these posters. Well, it's not really specific to that.
I had cardboard
kid
standees from video stores that I got for free because I was obsessed with movies. So, like, I had a standee for Broadcast News, which is one of my favorite movies as a 12-year-old. I had one for Willow, and I had one for Dirty Dancing. But these are the things I just got from the video stores they're going to, like, throw out when the promotion period went. And I just put those up, and then movie posters and stuff, too. So, like, they weren't necessarily indicative of, you know, what was super popular at the time. They were just things that you had.
Did you have a Cole movie party in your house with all of the standees?
It was more like the actual film. Yeah. It wasn't like just the person. But yeah, I just pretty much, like, the room that I had like really like strawberry wallpaper, because it was like some like kid's room when I inherited it when we moved in. So like, I just completely covered it with movie posters that I got from the video store. So some were like movies I really liked, and some were just like Nadine with Jeff Bridges. Just because, like, I got that for free, and like, it was better than the strawberries. So
yeah, I think about that too. Like, I didn't give a shit about hanging any. I like barely, I put some stuff up on the wall, but it was so just like haphazard. I never sat and like, oh, I need to decorate my room because I'm 12. Like, you know what I mean? I was just like, yeah, you got a free, oh, there's a Cubs poster giveaway. All right, I'll just tape that up on my. It was never like, I'm really into this, so I need to put a poster of it up. I just was like, I don't know. I don't know what any of this means.
Yeah. So, all right, and the next one is 5 Feet Apart. This is a, I don't know if it's a remake, but it's the same concept of, like, you know, a bubble boy type movie. It's a romance right. that, you know, right. two love-struck teenagers can't touch because of a physical disease or something, or a condition or something, yeah, that they can't get close enough. But you just want them to get closer. That's you just want it to happen.
I just
maybe
wish.
They could take the chance for love. You love know, will protect them.
I think
love will inoculate them.
I think it will. That should be the real title of this movie. Yeah. Love will inoculate you.
So you can check that out. And then the last one is Captive State. We actually had a guest, Heather Dowling, who saw this film. It was one of those films that they're like, oh, this sounds like a really interesting premise, but not a great movie. But, like, it's set in Chicago. Aliens have already invaded. We're already in a captive state, and it's like a resistant movement, but there's people who work with the aliens, and then it raises like the moral quandary. Well, is this saving more lives if we work with them, or we overthrow them? But apparently it does nothing and goes nowhere.
Oh, great.
And evidently the aliens are in it for like 5 minutes. Like when you see them, they're cool, but you barely see them because it didn't have a big budget. It's full, chock full of like character actors. So I was actually interested in it, but I didn't get to it. And actually Kevin Pollak and Jamie Foxx went on Doughboys because they went to the AMC Dine-In and they watched that movie. So they kind of trashed it from that too. but I'll probably check it out when it comes out on iTunes or whatever because I'm curious. But it was not enough to get to the theater for the week and a half that it played.
Right.
So,
okay. I want to talk about the Patreon tiers for a second. We sent out our first loot crate. I think a picture of it went onto the Twitter feed. If not, I know Daniel will be posting that on the Comedy Film Nerd site. We had said that, like, if you do the $25 loot crate tier, if you do it for 2 months, we'll send you $100 worth of stuff. We changed it, and I'm telling you right now, I'm actually sending out $200 worth of stuff.
So
right now, if you do that and you do it for 2 months, you're going to get $200 worth of stuff. I was barely able to close the priority mailbox that I put it in, but you get a lot of cool stuff. DVDs, books, CDs, T-shirts, and some weird stuff we have in the garage. I think the last one got a ninja hood. So, as a bonus.
This is what happens when we leave Chris alone in the garage. Yeah. He just starts dumping.
I just go crazy. Yeah. I'm like, oh, somebody's going to like this. This is really, why would somebody not want this? So, check it out at the Patreon tier. That's at the $25 level. Just all you got to do it for is for 2 months, and we will send you $200 worth of stuff from the garage. All right. And premiering this week is Men in Black International. And, I'll tell you, this is the kind of movie that not only do I not want to see it, when I watch the trailer, it makes me sad. So
it's one of those things, and I was talking about it, I think, ahead of the Godzilla spoiler, because that's where, like, I'm watching, and again, I like Godzilla, listen to the spoiler next week, but I'm watching all the trailers, and it's all just rehashes. It's Men in Black, it's Shaft.
Well, it's summer.
Yeah, so. Right. But it's like Hollywood is really... And they have for the last 5 years or maybe longer, but they're really doubling down on this rehash the old property. Like, there was nothing inventive or new. I was like, come on. Someone has to have some new, interesting idea.
Oh, yeah, there's plenty of them. They're just not getting bought or produced.
Well, when it does get made and it becomes a hit, then they'll just do that 9 times.
Right, exactly. Right. Oh, see this new innovative thing? Oh, yeah, look, it was nothing like anything came before it. But now let's do it again 9 times. So...
I kind of actually want to see that movie, I'll be honest with you, because it's kind of like Thor and Valkyrie spinoff movie.
Right. It really feels that way, yeah. Even the casting is lazy in this movie. I mean, I just look at a movie like that, and because we've grown up, we've come up through independent film, I look at a movie like that, and I go, you know what? You could make $201 million features for this.
I know.
And even if half of them are awful, you've still done something better.
You would in that 200. There would be some amazing movies made.
Yeah.
Get some really talented filmmakers and writers and people together. You would like these are going to be amazing.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, they're making too many movies, guys. Let's be honest. Like, now there's Netflix and all those other things too. Like, there's so much content that you can't keep up. So I just don't think there's anywhere to put them.
That's a good point. It's a good point.
And premiering this week, The Dead Don't Die. I really want to see this movie. Just when I thought, like, I'm done with zombies. I don't want to see anymore. But Jim Jarmusch is doing a zombie movie with Bill Murray. I'm in. I want to see it. Yeah.
Cast is incredible. Mm-hmm. I love Jim Jarmusch. Mm-hmm. I hate the zombie genre. I hate it. Hate it. Hate it. Hate it.
It's played out.
It's so played out. Yeah. I don't like gore really, which mm-hmm. it probably will be. It'll probably be arty gore, but right. it'll be gore.
There'll be
so,
some for sure.
Right. So like, I'll probably see it because the cast is amazing. Yeah. But I never get excited about zombie movies.
Well, you can tell by the trailer, like, you know, just when there's a gory scene, the trailer like cuts out and goes to a joke. Like you see every time like a zombie's about to get its head blown off or something, like, oh, cut.
I had a similar reaction to the trailer, Cole, and like I was like, if this cast and this director were on anything else,
right?
I would sprint to the theater, but I'm so done with the zombie thing.
Mm-hmm. I never liked it. I mean, every once in a while, they're like, oh, make them fast or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like they've done that, but like I just, I don't know. I just think it's lazy. I just don't think there's anything to it, really. I think we've seen it a billion times, and I don't know. It just never excites me anymore.
I was excited when Walking Dead came out mm-hmm. 10 years ago.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm done.
Yeah.
I got it.
Yep.
So this one, I think, you know, if I had to choose what movies are coming out this weekend, it's going to be that one. And the next one is Shaft. And, you know, I don't have anything against these Shaft movies. They're okay. But I don't know if I need another one. I don't know if I need three generations of Shaft put together for a money grab.
I'm all in.
Yeah,
I'll be honest, because the 2001 Shaft I thought was fantastic. Like mm-hmm. when Sam Jackson first took the role, and like, right. Jeffrey Wright's villain in that is so amazing that mm-hmm. like I really liked it. So, and it's been since 2001, I think. So yeah. It's been 18 years. So I'm good with it, and I like the fact that it's the three generations. Well, mm-hmm. whether it'll be good or not, I don't know. But yeah. I think the trailer's pretty amusing. So I don't know. I'll give it a shot.
Well, I think out of the three, I'll do The Dead, you do Shaft, and you know, we'll come back when you get back from the road. We'll
yeah, talk I'm not about seeing it. Any of these.
Yeah.
I'm glad I'm not. I'm glad we're taking next week off because I'll see something else.
Actually, yeah, you can avoid them because we've got a show banked for next week.
Yeah, I'm going to see something.
Going on the road at Astra. Mm. Going to the stars.
Yeah, oh, I am at Astra-ing my way. Yep. Through the East Coast, right. Telling jokes.
So that is our show, Cole. Where can people find you online, and when you got coming up?
Other than the festival. Find me. I have a website that's sometimes updated. That's colestratton.com. I'm on Twitter as @ColeStratton and Instagram is @StrattonCole. I actually collect a lot of movie posters, like old movie posters, foreign posters and stuff. So I put those up pretty often. So there's tons, like hundreds of those up. If you want to check those out, they're kind of fun. And I do a lot of stuff over at the West Side Comedy Theater in Santa Monica. I have a monthly pop culture trivia show that I run called Nerdology. Mm-hmm. There's one coming up this Friday at 6:00 p.m. That's mm-hmm. June 13th, something like that. June 14th, at 6:00.
I've won it, by the way.
Aaron has won it.
Oh, wow.
He has won it. It's 80s night. That's the theme for this one. So I'm sure I'll put up some posters that are appropriate to the night. That's really fun. And then I'm also at 10:00 that night. I'm in Mission Improbable, which is their like flagship show that I'm in a couple times a month usually. Yeah, so just check me out on those things.
All right.
Awesome. Progressive Comedy Tour is this week on the East Coast. Ron Placone and I are going June 12th to Washington, D.C., June 13th, Baltimore, June 14th, 15th. If you're not at the West Side Comedy Theater in Santa Monica, go to Philadelphia. We'll be there. June 16th, we're in New Haven, Connecticut, June 17th, New York City, June 19th, Boston.
Use Nightcrawler to get you one of those.
All of them. And go to GrahamElwood.com for all of the ticketing and all of your tour dating.
So, and the next issue of Long Going Far Away is out, and this is a script that I've been working on for a really long time, and just happened to be this issue. There's a joke about somebody going, look, just don't go all Dark Phoenix on me. And that issue dropped the same week the movie came out. So yes, I planned that 10 years ago, that Easter egg specifically for this weekend. So.
Brilliant, Chris. Brilliant.
Yeah, I've time traveled. I got it just right. That's what I worked on with my time machine, is an Easter egg.
You're like the Illuminati in your
Mancia Days of Future Past.
Yes. So check that out from Starburns Press on Comixology, Long Ago and Far Away. And that is our show, Greg.
That's our show, everybody. Mm. Cole, thank you so much. Yeah. Good to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
And Aaron, thank you so much for all the work you do on the All Things Comedy ones and twos. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember, Han shot first.